The Price of Life is Death, by DJ M. On the morning of June 6, 1924, at a camp perched at 23,000 feet on an ice ledge above the East Rongbuck Glacier, and just below the lip of Mount Everest's North Col, expedition leader Lieutenant Colonel Edward Norton made his final personnel selection of the men making a last desperate attempt to reach the summit. Image. The North Face. At 37 years of age, George Lee Mallory was Britain's most illustrious and capable climber. Sandy Irvine was a 22-year-old Oxford scholar, with little previous mountaineering experience, but with prodigious levels of stamina and engineering skills to coax the Heath Robinson oxygen-breathing apparatus into functioning at altitude. Time was of the essence. Though the day was clear, to the south skies were darkening with great rolling banks of clouds, confirming that the monsoon had reached Bengal, would soon sweep over the Himalaya, and as one of the climbers put it, obliterate everything. Mallory, though characteristically, remained cheerfully upbeat. In a letter home to his wife Ruth, penned that morning, he wrote, "We are going to sail to the top this time and God with us, or stamp to the top with the wind in our teeth." Image. Ruth and George. Norton was less sanguine. "There is no doubt," he confided to John Noel, a hardy veteran of many previous Himalayan explorations and the expedition's photographer, "Mallory knows he is leading a forlorn hope." Perhaps the memory of previous losses weighed on Norton's mind. The seven Sherpas left dead on the mountain in 1922, two more this season. The Scottish physician Keller's buried at Camp Erdzong during the approach march and reconnaissance of 1921. Not to mention the near misses, Mallory himself, a climber of stunning power and grace, sans pret sans reep rock, had on Everest already come close to death on three occasions. Norton of course knew well the cruel face of the mountain. From the North Col, the route to the summit follows the North Ridge, which rises dramatically in several thousand feet to join the Northeast Ridge, which in turn leads to the summit. Just the day before, he and Howard Somerville had set out from an advanced camp on the North Ridge at 26,800 feet. Cleverly avoiding the bitter winds that sweep the Northeast Ridge, they had made an ascending traverse to reach the great colloy that clefts the North Face and falls away from the base of the summit pyramid to the Rongbuck Glacier, some 10,000 feet below. Somerville collapsed at 28,000 feet. Norton pushed on alone, shaking from the cold, shivering so drastically he thought he had succumbed to a repeat bout of malaria. Earlier that morning, when climbing on pitch-black rock, he had foolishly removed his goggles. By the time he had reached the colloy, he was seeing double, and it was all he could do to remain standing. Forced to turn back at 28,126 feet, less than 900 feet below the summit, he was saved by Somerville, who led him back across ice-covered slabs. On the retreat to the North Col, Somerville himself suddenly collapsed, unable to breath. He pounded on his own chest, dislodged the obstruction, and coughed up the entire lining of his throat. By morning, Norton had lost his sight, temporarily blinded by the excruciating bright sunlight. In terrible pain, he now pondered Mallory's plan of attack. Image. Norton photographed by Somerville at 28,126 feet. At that time, no image had ever been taken at a higher altitude. Instead of traversing the face to the colloy, Mallory and Irvine would make for the Northeast Ridge, where only two obstacles barred the way to the summit pyramid: a distinctive tower of black rock dubbed the First Step, and farther along, the Second Step, a 100-foot bluff that would have to be scaled. Although concerned about Irvine's lack of experience, Norton was out of options in regard to amending the team for the next attempt. Perhaps he was swayed by Mallory, a formidably direct member of the expedition, who would not contemplate further delay. Image. The last photograph of Mallory, left, and Irvine taken by a Dalat Camp Vi on the North Col. 2 days after, Mallory and Irvine set out from their high camp for the summit. The bright light of dawn gave way to softer shadows as luminous banks of cloud passed over the mountain. Noel Adel, a brilliant climber in support, last saw them alive at 12:50 p.m., faintly from a rocky crag, two small objects moving steadily up the ridge. As the mists rolled in, enveloping their memory in myth, he was the only witness. Mallory and Irvin would not be seen or heard from again. Their disappearance would haunt both the expedition survivors, and a whole nation, and giving rise to the greatest mystery in the history of mountaineering. Never once did Adele doubt that Mallory and Irvin had reached the summit before they reached their end. Nor did he or other expedition members ever doubt or question the sublime purpose that had led them to cross hundreds of miles on foot, from India and across Tibet, just to reach the base of the mountain. Adele penned in his journal of his two lost friends, "My final glimpse of one, whose personality was of that charming character that endeared him to all and whose natural gifts seemed to indicate of such possibilities of both mind and body, was that he was going strong, sharing with that other fine character who accompanied him such a vision of sublimity that it has been the lot of few mortals to behold, few while beholding have become merged into such a scene of transcendence." In 1999, climbers working on the Mallory and Irvin research expedition arrived at Everest with the sole purpose of locating the bear. Despite 75 years passing since Mallory and Irvin disappeared, the odds were good. The constantly freezing temperatures and permanent layer of permafrost on Everest preserve almost perfectly the bodies of climbers who perish on its slopes. On May 1, a large, flat, white rock was noticed on the northern slopes of the mountain. Upon closer inspection, it became evident that this was not a rock, but the partly exposed body of George Mallory. Time had degraded most of his clothing, but the parts of his body that had been covered were still well preserved. Irvine's body was never found, though his climbing axe was located roughly 800 feet above Mallory's body. Researchers concluded from the location of the axe, and a rope found tied around Mallory's waist, that Mallory had likely been tied to Irvin, and either fell, dragging Irvin with him, or cut himself free before doing so. The pair's death was attributed to a fall. According to the survivors of the 1924 climbing expedition, Mallory was carrying both a picture of Ruth, that he intended to leave at the summit, and a camera to document his and Irvin's success. No trace of either has ever been found. Experts from Kodak even said that if a camera was ever located, the film could likely still be developed, though several expeditions in recent years to locate the film have proved to be fruitless. Of the 26 British climbers who, on three separate expeditions to the Himalaya, 1921-24, had walked over 400 miles off all established maps, 20 had seen the worst of the fighting in Europe during the Great War. 6 had been severely wounded, 2 others nearly killed by disease at the front, and 1 hospitalized twice with shell shock. 3 as army surgeons had dealt for the duration of hostilities with the agonies of the dying. 2 lost brothers, killed in action. All had endured the slaughter, the barking of the guns, the bones, rats, and barbed wire, the white faces of the dead. If the quest for Mount Everest began as a grand imperial gesture, as redemption for an empire of explorers that had lost the race for both the North and South Poles, it ended as a mission of regeneration for a country and people bled white by war. The question is not whether George Mallory was the first to reach the summit of Everest, but rather why he and Irvin kept climbing on that fateful day. Perhaps the answer lies in the single phrase uttered by one of the survivors as they retreated from the mountain, "The price of life is death." Mallory walked on because for him, as for many of his generation, death was but a frail barrier that men crossed, smiling and gallant every day. As climbers, they accepted a degree of risk unimaginable before the Great War. They were by no means cavalier, but death was no stranger. They had all seen so much that it had no hold on them. What mattered was how one lived, the moments of being alive. For all of them, Everest became an exalted radiance, a sentinel in the sky, a symbol of hope in a world gone mad. Image. Band of Brothers. Back row: L.R. Irvine, Mallory, Norton, Adele, and MacDonald. Front row: L.R. Shebbear, Bruce, Somerville, and Beetham. Onward. Copyright DJM 2019.